drought-busting atmospheric rivers, hard freezes, snow in them thar hills. It's dark and cold that time of year, winter in Northern California, and with it, some of our most interesting weather. We'll talk about it with forecasters Michelle Mead and Brooke Bingaman from the National Weather Service in Sacramento. It's all new and all blue. Join us now. Hey, Nolan, it's cold up in the hills and white, and the reservoirs are finally filling. You have to do the weather a bit as a board operator, right?
That's right, every weekday at noon, and I believe that certifies me as a semi-professional meteorologist.
We'll put your resume into the National Weather Service and see what they have to say about that.
Sounds good.
Let's get to our interview with Michelle Mead and Brooke Bingaman from the National Weather Service office in Sacramento. Michelle and Brooke, welcome back to Blue Dot.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having us. Yep.
Let's start talking about a general overview about what this winter has been like compared to some of our recent winters. What's the report card so far?
Well, so far we're doing quite well, actually. As we started out this fall season, we've seen a very nice, steady progression of storms, and they have come in at a rate that we've gotten to see quite a bit of improvement across the northern portion of the state. And that has to do a lot with the timing. We've been seeing systems come in with every 5 to 7 days, so there's plenty of time in between for the ground to soak up that rain, the reservoirs to fill, and things of that nature. The one caveat is we haven't seen a lot of great snowpack because most of the storms this fall and early part of the winter have been more on the warm side. It hasn't been until recently that we've started to see the colder storms with our snowpack increasing, and that's something we definitely still want to see.
Well, on that note, recently we're hearing a lot about the atmospheric river effect, and those tend to be warm storms. Could you explain to us what an atmospheric river is and what causes it?
So basically, an atmospheric river, I think a lot of folks grew up with the term Pineapple Express.
Mm-hmm.
And what that is it's a concentration of warm moisture off the equatorial Pacific, basically coming from the tropics, which came up with the Pineapple Express term. And what it is we look for that wind and moisture to interact with each other and bring a high, intense, fairly narrow ribbon of moisture that interacts with portions of the West Coast. And we have, on average, California sees 5 to 7 of those a year, and we've already seen 3 of those this winter season, which is a far cry from what we've seen our past season. So it does feel like we're seeing more, but right now we're right at about average, which is a good thing.
I'd like to talk a bit about computer models and forecasts, because I don't think people are really aware of how many different models there are that you use, which ones they are, and where they originate from. So let's start with which ones you use and where do they come from?
All right. Well, like you said, there are a variety of models that we can look at. Some of the newer models are very high resolution, so they help us pinpoint where the weather is going to impact. And those high resolution models tend to only go out for about 24 hours. So we use those models in the very, very short term, like I said, to help us pinpoint areas that will be impacted by whatever weather we're looking at. And then there are shorter-term models that go out for about 3 to 4 days, and then we have extended models that can go out anywhere from 7 to 10 days. So it really depends on what part of the forecast we're looking at in terms of which models we use. If we're concentrating on the short term, we'll look at the high-resolution and short-term models. If we're looking out into the 7-day forecast, then we'll look at those extended models. And so there's a ton of different model names. For instance, we have the GFS, the Global Forecast System, the North American model, the NAM. But in general, all of these models tend to originate from the research community within the field of meteorology. So they can come from universities. They can come from research centers.
And the forecasts that you have are really dependent on your confidence anyway, on whether those models agree. Would that be a fair way of putting it?
Yes, because a lot of times the models will show different solutions, but when the models start agreeing, that's when our confidence increases as to what the forecast will end up being.
I'd like to use a recent forecast as an example. We had a forecast recently where it called for a very hard freeze this week and polar air, and then it changed to a more warm and wet forecast with lots of rain. And, you know, a lot of people that follow weather casually just get the impression that, oh, they got it wrong, and they heard things like, oh, just wait 5 minutes and they'll change their forecast. But it's a lot more complicated than that, and I'd like people to understand how this works. Talk about how you guys have to make the call on things and how you have to wait until the models converge to have that level of certainty.
Sure. So, like you had already mentioned, the confidence, or like Brooke mentioned, you know, we kind of wait for those models to converge to increase our confidence in an event. That being said, if we see something that's out of the ordinary, say the Arctic outbreak that a couple of the models were advertising last week, even though they weren't all showing it, we had some reasonable we wanted to alert folks of the potential of this happening for a couple of reasons. One is we hadn't seen air this cold yet, and we had only a couple or three of the models that were hinting at this. So, and like we mentioned, our long-range models, you know, we don't have as many of them to look at. So when you've got two or three of them starting to hint at that, it does start to increase our confidence. But to be fair, we were always telling folks that the confidence was, you know, moderate, and to keep up on the forecast because things could change. And like you mentioned, they definitely changed for the wetter in the long run.
And yeah, to be fair, on your Twitter posts, I saw this constantly. You said, you know, stay tuned for the next couple of days until we're sure. And I think, you know, from my point of view, I appreciated it because, you know, I made sure all my pipes were wrapped. I was ready to cover all my citrus. You know, you got to be prepared if you're going to get weather like that, and you need to know in advance to do those things.
Correct. And that we were kind of putting the – we think folks would rather have known of the potential and had it not pan out than versus the vice versa.
Yeah,
so we said nothing, and then, hey, it did converge, and instead of giving you 3 days to prep, you had 24 hours to prep.
Yeah, and you're going to Home Depot, and they don't have any stuff left. And
right,
then you
exactly.
have burst pipes. And my better half's in Portland, and they are experiencing that Arctic air up there.
Yes, they are.
You're listening to Blue Dot on North State Public Radio, and we are talking to National Weather Service forecasters Michelle Mead and Brooke Bingaman. They join us from the office in Sacramento.
Let's talk about safety, because winter can be an especially dangerous time. Let's start with the valley issues and then work our way up. So what issues are we likely to encounter in the next couple weeks?
So one of the main hazards that comes with the winter season is, for California, that's considered our wet season. That's the highest likelihood that we'll be getting floods. So in terms of valley issues first, in the wintertime, we're constantly looking for the possibility of flooding. Now, if we just have a typical storm that crosses through California pretty quickly, and if the grounds are still fairly dry, that's not going to be a big issue. But lately, we've been getting a lot of very wet storms here in California, so our soils are already saturated. And so on top of the possible flooding, you could start seeing trees that will fall over more easily, even if there's not a lot of wind, because the soils are so saturated. You can also, as you start to travel up into the foothills, any type of higher terrain, if those soils get really saturated, then we could start seeing issues such as mudslides or debris flows. And, of course, in California, we have a lot of burn scars, which can also easily cause debris flows if there's a lot of rain hitting those burn scars. And then working our way up into the higher terrain, especially in the Sierra, that's when the winter can bring heavy snow and higher wind gusts as well. So the safety issues there relate more to travel conditions and people that live up in those higher communities. If you get a lot of heavy snow and high winds, that's going to cause whiteout conditions, making travel over the mountains extremely hazardous with very slick roads, or the roads may be closed and you can't travel at all. And you certainly don't want to be stuck on a mountain road because it's closed and you want to make sure that you have supplies with you. So those are some of the issues that we encounter in wintertime here in Northern California.
You mentioned burn scars, and just for our listeners, can you explain what those are and how they're caused?
Yeah, so a burn scar is what's left over after we've experienced a wildfire. So when a wildfire rages through a forested area, all those trees are burned and they're dead, so their root system no longer holds the soil together. And so then you have a very large open area, and so when you get heavy rain, it makes it much more easy for that soil to move and slough off from the hillside.
And how much coordination and communication do you do with other offices of the National Weather Service? And which ones would you say are the most valuable for us in this region?
So for those who don't know, there's actually 10 offices that cover the state of California, extending all the way from Medford, Oregon, down to Phoenix, Arizona. So we have a plethora of offices. We coordinate up here for Northern California with Monterey, Eureka, Medford, Reno, and portions of Las Vegas and Hanford. So there's a big area to cover here. California's a long, skinny state, and we have different topography, meaning, you know, we've got places that go from below sea level up to 10,000 feet. So there's definitely a lot of coordination that goes on. Like you mentioned, with this storm coming in, we're constantly either chatting with each other via online messaging or via phone call, just like this, saying, hey, you know, what's our message for the next 7 days, and how are we going to get the preparedness message out? So I would definitely make sure that, you know, if you live in Northern California, if you're on the coast, it would be Monterey and Eureka. If you are up in north of Shasta, it would be Medford, Oregon. If you're along the east side of the Sierra Nevada, it would be Reno. And then the San Joaquin Valley and part south would be Hanford. And then, of course, we're here and from Redding all the way down to Modesto.
I've noticed that recently you've done some cool things on social media with, like, Periscope, where you give little updates and things. Tell us a bit about that and how people can, that are really interested in weather, and especially with these extreme weather events we're having, how they can find out more.
Periscope is one of the newer technologies of social media that we've been utilizing. And the main reason we wanted to start experimenting with that form of social media is because it allows the audience members watching to interact with us and ask questions, and we can address them right then and there. So it's part weather briefing, but also part interaction with the people that we serve in this community and helping them understand and clarify things for them. And so if people are interested in watching our Periscopes, you can either get the Periscope app yourself and look up NWS Sacramento, or we always post all of our Periscope sessions onto Twitter. So if you get on Twitter and look up at NWS Sacramento, then you can click on the live Periscope link and either watch us live or watch the recording later.
And if you really are interested in weather and it's important to you, I highly recommend using your Twitter account because it's very informative.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Blue Dot on North State Public Radio. When we come back, we'll continue talking about our winter weather with meteorologists Michelle Mead and Brooke Bingaman from the National Weather Service in Sacramento. And we're back on Blue Dot, talking to Michelle Mead and Brooke Bingaman, meteorologists from the National Weather Service office in Sacramento. We've talked about this before, but I think it's worth mentioning. You guys have a mission that's round the clock, 365 days a year. Give us a sense of what it's like to have to staff a schedule like that, especially at a busy time like this. And are there times like now that it's literally all hands on deck?
Yes, definitely. With this atmospheric river event that's heading into California, we're looking at very high potential for flooding impacts for a prolonged time. And during events like this, we always have extra staffing. And like you said, it's practically all hands on deck. Now, granted, all hands aren't on deck the whole time because we operate 24/7. So what we'll do is make sure we have enough staffing during the day to help cover any conference calls, media interviews, social media, et cetera. But then even on the evening and overnight hours, we try to staff up extra in order to accommodate anything that could happen, you know, in the middle of the night. And so what it's like when all hands are on deck, there are times when almost everybody on the operations floor is on the phone answering questions, dealing with things, or we're just constantly busy working on things. And I know for me as a forecaster personally, you know, if I'm trying to organize things with friends, I'll be like, well, I might be able to do that, but if weather occurs, I'm out.
And you've agreed to spend time with us today, which is great, but give me a sense of how many interviews you have to do today.
Wow. I think our forecasters have fielded at least 24 media interviews.
Wow.
We've had one on camera. They came into the office. Brooke did an update to our YouTube video that we just sent out today. We have done already 4 county conference calls, briefing the individual counties on their expected impacts from these storms. So probably 50 just today alone, and we're still 2 days out from the storm. But this is the time to be doing all this prep work because we want to make sure everybody is taking the time before the storm hits to know where they live, to ensure that if you're in a flood-prone area, you are getting the supplies you need to protect your home and also have a ready-set-go kit in case you have to evacuate.
One of the things I'd like to ask you is, like, during this winter so far, and including what's going on right now, what's the most interesting thing that's happened in terms of a weather forecast or event this winter?
It would have to be what we're doing right now. Like I mentioned before this event, things were coming in at a pretty good pace every 7 to 10 days. So there was plenty of time to, quote-unquote, recover in between storms. But this next 10 days is looking very intense for this winter season. We're expecting not just 1, 2, potentially 3 atmospheric rivers to be hitting portions of California over the next 10 days. So this first one, of course, is mostly the central portion of the state and portions of Northern California. And the next one could either be as far north as the Oregon border or be right on top of where this one's coming. And then, like I said, there's another one coming through. So it's the short duration in between these systems, which is why kind of the hairs on the back of our neck are up saying, you know, we're going to see a 1, 2, 3 punch with not a lot of recovery. So that's why we're anticipating so many flood impacts in the next 10 days.
One thing a lot of us don't understand is the difference in, especially these kinds of events, in precipitation types, and especially amounts as you go from the valley floor up into the mountains. Because the amount of precipitation you get from, say, Chico or Redding up into the hills and the mountains is vastly different, isn't it? Why is that?
Yeah, well, all of this basically boils down to the geography of interior California. And the amounts can be varied in different places a lot of times because it depends on what the winds are doing or where the storm is aimed. But in general, most of our storms come from the Pacific Ocean and then travel eastward across California into Nevada. And so what we deal with in terms of precipitation types is that we generally have rain in the valley. And then depending on how cold the storm is, then that moisture, if it's in a cold enough air mass, it will fall as snow in the higher terrain. And then you have that interesting middle ground where it's kind of cold enough to snow, but not quite. And so you can get a mix of precipitation, kind of a mix of rain and snow in certain areas. Now, where that changes over from rain into snow varies with each storm because it depends on how cold the air mass is. the colder it is, then that means the lower the snow levels will be. So sometimes snow can fall as low as the foothills. And we define the foothills as generally being between 1,000 to 3,000 feet in elevation. And then above 3,000 feet, that's what we consider more the mountain areas. But sometimes snow levels will be high above 8,000 feet. And so even though it's snowing over the Sierra Crest, it may not impact the passes of the mountain roads. So that's kind of a little explanation of the different precipitation types we see. And it kind of roughly explains a concept, which is, this is the technical term called the orographic effect. But in layman's terms, that just means the effect of the mountains and how the mountains interact with weather patterns.
And explain how they affect the amounts, because I'm looking at forecasts for the amount of rain you're getting in the mountain areas.
Oh, and how it can be higher up in the mountains.
Yeah, how much more you get.
Yeah, well, one of the things that the orographic effect of the mountains does is that when you have these, you know, this storm moving in, it's got the moisture and it falls into the valley, but as the storm hits the mountainside and lifts upward into the mountain, it kind of has a squeezing effect. So if you had a wet sponge and it's really saturated and you were to just carry it, it would kind of like drip, drip, drip. But then if you squeezed it, and that would be like the storm hitting the mountains, then if you squeeze that sponge, then a lot more precipitation could fall. And so that's kind of a layman's analogy, hopefully,
yeah,
to help
no,
people
that works.
Understand.
And so, like with an atmospheric river event, what kind of rainfall totals could you be looking at, say, you know, around 3,000, 4,000 feet?
It's going to be impressive. We'll take, for example, the system coming in over the weekend. You know, the valley is anywhere from 3 to 5 inches. You get into the foothills, it's 4 to 8 inches. And then you get in the higher terrain, like 5,000 feet and above, and it's 10 to 15.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's kind of like what Brooke was commenting. The foothills is like a light squeeze on the sponge, and then when you get to the highest terrain, it's really squeezing the sponge.
That's a lot of water.
It's mm-hmm. a lot of water.
What kind of information do you get in terms of climate models for the long-term winter forecasts, and how useful is that to you? What does it look like for the rest of this winter?
So the long-term models, the seasonal outlooks and stuff that we get from the climate prediction bases a lot of its information on what has happened in the past. They look back and they also look for atmospheric anomalies. The most common known anomaly is the El Niño-La Niña phenomena, which is the warming or cooling of the equatorial waters and the changing jet stream as a result of those waters. Now, that's just one signal. There are numerous others, but the El Niño-La Niña is the one we've got the most research on, which is about 66 years now. So what they do is they look for those signals, and they also look back at the past and say, well, the last time we had this type of signal of warm or cold waters, this is the kind of precipitation and temperature pattern we experienced across the United States. Northern California is one of those unique entities where our signal in both El Niño and La Niña is kind of in that middle ground, meaning we don't have a real direct correlation. So a lot of times we're in what they call the equal chance category, or I say get out your dartboard. And for California, that's saying a lot because on any winter season, we can vary as much as 40% in our water year precipitation in our winter months. So when it says equal chances, it's 33.3% of below, 33.3% of average, and 33.3% of above average. And so far this winter, we've been right at or just above, and we still are only halfway through our wet season. We're only in January, and we have all the way through May to go. So we still got a long way to go, so it does seem to be tipping into that above average, but I don't want to put the cart before the horse because who knows, right after these storms move through, we could very easily dry out for the rest of the winter season. So
yes,
so far we're looking good.
You know, last year we heard so much about El Niño influencing our weather, but this year we didn't hear that as much. This winter's been much wetter and more active. As you've said, has it been a surprise at all that, you know, the weather this year? Is it just, you know, like you said, it's going according to what you would consider statistically average?
Yeah, I think for the general public, they might be surprised by it because there was a lot of hype last year about the Godzilla El Nino, mm-hmm. and everybody expected a lot of flooding. But for us in the Sacramento office, it's not a surprise to us. And in fact, it's one of the main things we tried to message this past fall to a lot of the emergency managers in the counties and to the general public. And just as Michelle was saying, is that our area in Northern California is in between where the El Nino and La Nina signal tend to impact the West Coast, because a La Nina typically puts storms into the Pacific Northwest, and an El Nino, it pushes most of the storms down into SoCal. So we're in the middle ground, and we can get storms from either a La Nina or an El Nino signal. We can get wet or dry years in a neutral year as well. So that was one of the things that we messaged really hard this past fall and early winter, is telling people, hey, we have equal chances. It could be an average year, it could be another dry year, or it could be an above normal year. But either way, you know, we've had several years of drought, so we still need to conserve water. But on top of that, we could have some very serious storms this coming season, so we have to be prepared for flooding.
And what would you say you most would like a listener to know about the challenges and importance of your work?
So a lot of folks don't realize the mission of the National Weather Service is the protection of lives and property and the continuation of our economy through the issuance of our forecasts and our watches and warnings. So when we're messaging on social media and partner emails, if you see us doing a lot, it's because there's usually something big coming. We have, like Brooke mentioned, we've really dabbled in the social media world probably a lot in the last 3 years. And we think that's really paying off because the more we can spread our message and the more folks we can protect and inform, then we really feel like we're living our mission and doing what it is we're here to do. And it's a very gratifying feeling to know that, you know, you're standing in the grocery store and standing in line and you hear someone say, I hear a big storm is coming. Yeah, I covered my pipes or I got sandbags. You know, to me, that's incredibly gratifying to knowing that our message is getting out and that the folks are actually taking action. Because in the end, you know, a forecast is great, but if people aren't acting on it, then what good did it do? So that's for us when we hear those anecdotal or, you know, the Caltrans said, hey, we saw half as much traffic headed up the mountain during the storm, but it really picked up before. That tells us that people actually heeded the warnings, and that's very gratifying for us.
Well, this completes, this is our fourth in a series of seasonal interviews with you guys. We started last spring, and now we've made it through spring, summer, fall, and winter. So thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for calling.
We've been talking to Michelle Mead and Brooke Bingaman, forecasters for the National Weather Service's Sacramento office. Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio. Follow us on Twitter at NSPR News and me at Dave Schlom. Thanks to co-producer Nolan Ford. And just remember, when he delivers a forecast of bad weather, he's just the messenger. But when the weather is fine and fair, he's totally responsible for that. He and I both remind you that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.